Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wrestling It's Back to Radio for January the 16th, 2014. It's your host, the man with the master plan, Wayne Benitez. What's up, ladies and gents? We got a show for you. We got up on here one half of the Hit Squad and former RH wrestler. Give it up once again for Steve Monster Mac.
What up, yeah. WB? You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Hi, what's going on?
Everything's good here at Wrestling Is Factor. It's an honor for you to be on tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm sitting here watching some Knicks-Pacers highlights. Very depressed about my Knicks this year.
Yeah, it's so depressing, yeah. Ever since Jason Kidd and Wallace left.
Yeah.
It hasn't been the same since, yeah.
No leadership in that locker room whatsoever. But
right.
It's all good. We're here to talk about wrestling, so what's good?
True. When you was growing up, who did you idolize while watching wrestling?
Growing up, I had a lot of different idols. There was Big Van Vader, who, I mean, for his size, you know, looking at me and him, I'm just a shorter version of him, and you know, like we got the same bulldozer body type, you know. But then there's also guys like Macho Man Savage, who, you know, I enjoyed his charisma and his high-flying ability. And then, when you look at, I always watched a lot of international wrestling, so Masahiro Chono was another guy that I was way into. And the last guy is a little bit controversial, but Chris Benoit is someone that I looked at a lot as to one of the best, you know, pure wrestlers, athletes, whatever you want to call them, because he was, you know, outside of having the top notch character like some of the other guys did, when you saw him fight, you knew whoever he was in there with, it was a fight. So, like, you know, I was always into guys who brought more realism. So, you know, guys like I said, Vader, also Sting and Great Muta, those are two other guys that I was really into, and the Steiner brothers. You know, they were definitely guys because they brought a more realistic style to wrestling rather than just the carnival show atmosphere, I guess you could say, that a lot of other guys brought when I was growing up.
Right. And what are your memories of training at LIWF Doghouse.
It's kind of funny because I was talking to a few of the guys on Facebook today about some of our memories from the doghouse. It was like a fraternity house, you know what I mean? Like, there was people, you know, some people legit stayed in the school, but we all had the same common love for wrestling, and we enjoyed being around the ring, and we had that camaraderie, mostly because a lot of us were guys that a lot of other promoters wouldn't deal with. And it wasn't because we had attitudes or anything like that. They just looked at us like we were street trash. You know, obviously over time we proved them wrong, and, you know, we showed them that this street trash could go, and if you gave us the opportunity, we'd run things the way we did for a bunch of companies, you know? And it wasn't just Moff and myself. It was Homicide. It was Key. Guys like the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels were doing their thing for a little while. Guys like, and I know a couple of people are going to be like, what? Guys like Boogaloo, Lowrider, and Guapo were definitely running things in WXW. Guys from all over, you know, from the doghouse were running all over the place, you know, and it was an awesome deal to be a part of. It just sucks that it ended so fast. You know, if it was up to me, it would have still been around, but who knows, maybe too much of a good thing would have been a bad thing, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And a couple of your trainers were Homicide and the Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez.
Yes, sir. Manny, he's one of the toughest dudes out there. Even though he's like 800 years old right now, he still whip anybody's ass, you know?
Right.
He's tough little Hispanic dude. So, and he used to tell us great stories, too, of, you know, coming up to territories and being a part of the NWA when it was blowing up. And we got to learn a lot from Manny about, you know, basically how to protect ourselves in the ring. You know, a lot of a lot of wrestlers, trainers, whatever you want to call them, they only teach you stuff like, you know, how to bump, how to run the ropes, how to do certain moves. And that's pretty much it. But, like, Manny had the experience on, like, how to just, you know, if something happens, someone wants to get brave, what to do to stop them real quick, you know, and shoot on them a little bit, just enough to protect yourself, you know what I'm saying? And,
right.
You know, with Homicide showed us basically almost everything that we couldn't learn through experience. He taught us everything else, you know. There's certain things you have to learn just by being out there as part of the show and experiencing that firsthand. But the other stuff Homicide taught a lot of us. And, you know, he doesn't get enough credit for being a great trainer because a lot of people, you know, they know him as LAX Homicide. They don't know that he's helped guys like Jay Lethal. He's helped guys all over the place, you know, and when his time is done in the ring, if he chooses to be, you know, he'll be showing the next generation of guys, and he's going to have a great career doing that when he's ready for that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yes. Also, Low-Key is also is your cousin also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're cousins, but we're more like brothers because we're raised, we grew up about 10, 15 blocks away from each other, went to the same elementary school, same high school for a year, and I mean, pretty much every other weekend, if not every weekend, we were together growing up, and we started in the business the same day, and you know, he's to me, and it's not because he's my cousin, but you know, I could say it, even though, you know what I'm saying, like, I could say that he's great no matter what, but to me, if you look at all the wrestlers in the world right now, the top, whether it's WWE, Japan, Puerto Rico, Mexico, Europe, whatever, he's in the top 25 no matter what because of the stuff that he could do. And it's not just the stuff that he can do, it's how he can elevate someone to perform on his level. I've seen him take guys who shouldn't even be in the ring with him and make them look like $1 million, you know. And he showed that in the WWE too when he was there, you know, that he could take guys who don't have the skill set that he has and make them look like they're on his level. You know, he's been doing that for a long time, you know. So right now he's going through some stuff. He's got a leg injury that happened in Japan. And, you know, once he gets over that hurdle, you know, I'm pretty sure Homicide and I will do my best. We'll do our best to make sure that he comes out of retirement, this Terry Funk-like retirement that he's going through right now.
Right. And also, what are your memories of teaming with Dan Moss in the Hit Squad?
It was kind of thrown upon me. I was when I met Dan Moss, I was already in my third year of being an indie guy traveling all over the place, and Moss showed up at the JP Wrestling School, and you know, they Homicide and Frank, the promoter, had saw him, and they were like, "Yo, you guys look alike. You gotta team up." And you know, we practiced a little bit, and you know, I was hesitant at first, but you know, it was more like, "We're gonna do this, okay?" So you know, I just did what I had to do. And it's funny because I heard Moff tell a story about how in our first match, we had like a 15-minute match. I didn't tag him in until like the 13th minute. You know, so like, it was like, you know, I had singles mentality back then. But now I've teamed up with a lot of guys who I really love teaming up with, especially guys like Low Life Louie and Havoc and, you know, Bison and guys like that, you know, I've teamed up with and had success. But when it comes down to it, I feel like it's destiny that me and Moff met each other, because something happens when we team up. Like, everything just changes, and like, it's kind of like we don't even have to talk, stuff just clicks, and you know, we just go into another level. And like, we just had a match over at the Luda School for Fighting Spirit Wrestling for Joel Maximo, and something just clicked, like it always does. And it's one of the best matches I've had in the last 5 years. I've had a lot of good ones, especially 2013 was a really good year for me. I had a lot of good matches with guys that I wanted to work with, and they weren't high profile, like that were all over the place, like a Davey Richards or whatever, but you know, I knew what I did and I enjoyed working. And you know, to say that match that we had was the best match I've had in the last 5 years is saying a lot, but it's because me and Moff just have this certain chemistry that you know, there's nobody else that has it. You know, and as Moff has gotten older and wiser, you know, it's really cool that, you know, even though I helped molded him, there's a lot of stuff that he's learned that he's putting into our matches. And it's just like, all right, that's what's up. Now we're on another level. So, you know, we're looking for some big things this year, 2014, starting with Extreme Rising. You know, we just want to show everybody, you know, we still got a little gas left in the tank, and we plan on burning it all up. You know what I mean?
Right. And what are your memories of working at Frank Goodman's USA Pro?
I really enjoyed working for Frank Goodman. He was... I hope this doesn't, if he hears this doesn't sound bad to him, but he was the definition of a carnival promoter in that he had many different acts going on under one tent. And, you know, it didn't happen to me too often, but if you were like the last match on a 15 card match, you wanted to slit your wrist because, you know, you get out at 2 a.m. if you're lucky. But, he always had me on first half, which was awesome. So I appreciate that much. But Frank was one of the few guys that, you know, he always had faith in, whether it was me and Moff or, you know, it was me by myself. He always gave me the trust, the respect that a lot of promoters, you know, they sometimes they just don't. So he was straight up, like, you know, whether it sounded mean or not, but he told you what he was really thinking, at least to me. I know he didn't tell everybody. But, you know, if he was thinking about certain things or whatever, he would straight up tell me. I didn't take offense to it. I was just like, all right, that's cool. So what do you want to do now then? You know, and he would work with me. You know, he put me in there with a lot of big names. I mean, I wrestled the Road Warriors of all teams, you know what I mean, because of Frank Goodman. So he's always going to be a top guy in my book to me. You know, and I really, to be honest, a lot of good talent came out of USA Pro. So, you know, he was doing something right. You know, and we always, you know, we always had a good house. So, you know, he was doing his promoting. He knew what was up. But, you know, he's down in Florida, and hopefully one of these days I get to get down to Florida and work for him one more time, or he comes up here. But, you know, like I said, he's one of the better promoters in my book that I've worked with.
Yes. What are your memories of Jersey All-Pro Wrestling?
JAPW is my home. Everything that has gone on in JAPW the last decade or so, actually more. I mean, I've been around that company since 98. So, like, everything that's gone on, big time or, you know, whatever, I've been a part of, whether it was wrestling, commentating, or, you know, helping out in the back or whatever it was, you know, I was there for. So I always think of JAP fondly. I'm a little sad that it's not around right now because, you know, we would have definitely we were like, you know, had a lot of big plans the last time JAP ran. And, you know, it just a whole bunch of, it was like a perfect storm of things hit, and JAP had to stop running. But, you know, I talk to Frank on the regular, and he's got a lot of plans for JAP's return. Hopefully we get to it this year. We're supposed to do it in March, but the Rahway Rec Center is still messed up from Hurricane Sandy. And, you know, it's taking forever to fix this building. So hopefully they get it fixed soon because I know that's where he wants to have the first show no matter what. So, you know, he'll wait until the building's done before he can do something. And, you know, when it does come back, because it will come back, hopefully I'll have the same big role that I've had, whether it's wrestling or behind the scenes, you know what I mean? And there's been so much stuff that's happened, good fortunate stuff to me and to a lot of guys, you know, and there's a lot of guys who, going back to the Bayonne days, they became family because we were traveling everywhere together. And, you know, that's always going to be the home fed, you know, for me, no matter what.
Right. And, how was it like working with the Haas brothers?
It's funny because we were real tight with them, but it was like going to a real fight every single match because back then they had just gotten out of Seton Hall. They were still all about that amateur wrestling mentality. And, you know, we would tag each other, and the minute it would start to get a little too heated, they were going to that shoot mentality, and me and Moff had to learn on the fly real quick how to defend ourselves because, you know, they could just catch you with anything at any point, anywhere. You wouldn't even know what the hell hit you. So, you know, it was like, you know, it wasn't, they weren't being dicks or anything like that. It was just the mentality of an amateur wrestler. Once you hit that switch, it's hard turning it off, you know, and, you know, Russ was one of the funniest dudes I'd ever met in my life. And, you know, he always would do stuff to rile up Charlie. So if, like, you know, before a match he would get Charlie pissed, we knew we were going to be in for a long match. And Russ would just sit there and laugh and laugh. And we'd have to smack him up a little bit, you know, to get back at him for pissing off Charlie. But, Yeah, I always thought, I mentioned this not too long ago, I always thought that if given the opportunity to work for the WWE and be on the full-time roster, that they would have been looked at as the greatest brother tag team in the history of wrestling, better than the Briscoes or, you know, anybody else who's ever been brothers and teamed up. They would have been the best at it because they just had so much ability, so much talent and skill. And, you know, eventually one of them would have been a world champ and the other one would have been an Intercontinental champ. You know what I mean? So I always thought they had so much potential. And, you know, unfortunately, Russ passed away way too soon. And, you know, but Charlie still had his run with Shelton, who was like his brother from another mother. You know what I mean? And they're still doing their thing. I think they're wrestling this weekend against Rob Conway and his partner, Dax or whatever his name is, you know, down in Texas. So, you know, hopefully somewhere down the line I get to me and Moff, someone books me and Moff versus Charlie and Shelton one time, you know, just to, so we can have some fun. You know what I mean?
Right. What are your memories of working with Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
We didn't really – I only worked with them a couple of times, but, you know, I've never had a bad match with them. I felt like – and I've mentioned this to Negro and Casey Blade – They had so much charisma, and they were such great natural bad guys. And I feel like they never took advantage of the opportunity that they had, because when they started to blow up, that was when there was no Hit Squad, no SAT, no Backseat Boys, any of the top tag teams from when, you know, me and Moff were teaming up full time. We all had dissipated, and they really should have been right there with the Briscoes as far as, you know, competing for the top tag team, because they had a lot of talent in the ring, but they were great. You know, EC Negro is one of the best talkers that I've ever met in the business. You know, he could get you to hate him just by saying hi, you know what I'm saying? And right. He has a lot of charisma. And Casey Blade, he's actually, you know, at one point he was one of the better big guys around, and it's not even that he was that big, it was just, you know, when compared to Negro, who's about 6'2", you know, at his heaviest, maybe 240, Casey Blade was about 5'10", you know, about 260, you know what I mean? So Blade, though, he was a great bumper, you know, but unfortunately he caught a few injuries and kind of messed him up, you know, so they never got a chance to really, you know, reach their potential, you know. But, you know, that's the nature of the business, though. Sometimes, you know, the team that you think is going to be the greatest ends up being nothing because of an unfortunate accident, and the teams that you think are going to suck the most end up being the most talked about. So, you know, anything could happen. But like I said, the Scoundrels, for me, there was a lot of potential with that team, you know?
Right. And, what are your memories of working for Ring of Honor?
Well, for me, like, if anybody ever asks what's my highlight, I guess, in my wrestling career, the first thing is going to be obviously going to Japan with Moff and Homicide and doing business for Big Japan. But the second is, you know, starting Ring of Honor, because that company was started off of the work that a select group that I was a part of was doing, you know, the stuff that me and Moff were doing with Key and Homicide and JP, the stuff that SAT and Xavier were doing in Jack Sabbath's ICW, and the stuff that guys like American Dragon and Christopher Daniels were doing on the West Coast and the East Coast, that's what started that company, you know. And the first thing that you ever see in Ring of Honor's history, it's me and Moff. You know, we getting on a bus and getting the fans riled up, and then we, you know, beat up the Christopher Streets connection, which is, you know, another group of doghouse guys. You know what I mean? So, like, that's, to me, that's big time, because, you know, that's boys guys that I grew up with Mace for going back to the fifth grade. So the fact that I was in there with Mace, you know, doing that, Buffy I've known since my first year wrestling, and Moff is, you know, he was my boy, you know what I mean? So we were all starting this new Fed, and, you know, it grew up into something huge. And, you know, I don't know if we thought it was going to be that big. We just thought it was, you know, going to be the top indie. We didn't think it was going to be the number two, number three company in the United States when we started it. You know what I mean? We just were like, all right, let's make it to the year and let's see where we're at the end of the year, you know? And then they started getting TV deals and they started getting all kinds of nonsense and major press. And, you know, it was cool that, like, guys in WWE would talk about guys from Ring of Honor, you know what I mean? And because up until that point, they didn't mention anything about indies, you know? So it was cool to see that Ring of Honor was getting blown up because of our efforts, you know what I mean? And, you know, my legacy in Ring of Honor isn't as big as someone like Homicide or Punk or Samoa Joe, but I got that spot where if people, you know, ever start a trivia game on Ring of Honor, I'm part of it because I was the first match, first act, first whatever, you know what I mean? Plus, we were also given the deal where we were the guys who upheld the Code of Honor, which is the major gimmick for Ring of Honor, you know, and we were those guys. We were the face for that deal, you know, so they put a lot of faith in us. And, you know, for that first year, I thought me and Mav carried it pretty well. And then, you know, stuff happens where you get into disagreements and next thing you know, you're suspended and, oh, no, wait, you're not really suspended. I fired you, but I told you you were suspended. So to being, oh, it's one of Homicide's hooligans. So I'm still up in there every once in a while.
And what are your memories of working at Major League Wrestling?
I loved MLW. MLW made me feel like I was a big-time star. Court Bauer really wanted to do a lot of things with the Hit Squad. Unfortunately, that was the time where me and Moff were going our separate ways and, you know, stuff just wasn't working out. But MLW, like I said, I felt like it was big-time because they had a big-time production. We had Joey Styles commentating. We would go do press, not press, but, you know, filming up in upstate New York to go get stuff done at Court Bauer's house. We got flown to all over Florida, working with all these legends. So, like, for me, it was, like, a major learning experience, but at the same time, it was a major, like, they bring you down here, so you obviously got something, you know, and it really sucks, like I said, that me and Moff never got a chance to really fulfill any sort of deal that we were supposed to do down there. But, you know, at the same time, I got to work with Umaga, who I was already cool with, but, you know, working with him down there, that's how we really got cool. And I got to work with Samu and Mana. And, you know, it was really weird because, like, I would hang out. I would do shows with them up here, but now we were doing shows down in Florida, traveling and hanging out. And, you know, so, like, it was a cool deal for me. You know, I liked MLW. I kind of wish that it kept going. But, you know, again, sometimes too much of a good thing is a bad thing, you know?
Right. And you also worked at Urban Wrestling Federation also.
Yes, UWF. That was cool because I was on pay-per-view. I'm pretty sure from here we're going to talk a little bit about Extreme Rising, but this is my first opportunity to work with Steve O'Neill. And, you know, I had heard about him because he did GLOW and D-WOW and stuff like that down in Philly. And, you know, I heard about how crazy those shows were. So, you know, I was kind of like, I wasn't really sure what to expect with UWF. But, you know, he had his stuff on lockdown when we got to UWF. Everything was already worked out. You know, the rappers knew what their deal was. All the wrestlers, you know, we all were kind of like, we felt a little bit like we were, you know, it was wrestling, but we felt like we were a second-class citizen because, you know, the rappers were whatever. But we made it work because everybody was just, they took it as an opportunity. And, you know, Steve O'Neill, you know, he was willing to work with us. So, like, if we felt like something needed to be changed or, you know, maybe we should try something a little different, he was down to let us do that, you know. And props to him and Kevin Kleinrock, because I know it's hard dealing with guys like, you know, like rappers, because they have their cliques, they have their friends that they need to hook up, and they want to make sure they don't look like scrubs or whatever. And then you got the wrestlers who don't want to look like scrubs. So, you know, they had a lot of stuff to deal with, but somehow it worked out. And, you know, it was a lot of fun, man. One of my favorite matches is wrestling with Black Cheese. And, you know, we had a storyline that, you know, it was our storyline that we made work. And, you know, I got to hang out with a couple of cool dudes and get people involved, you know, like Billy Blue is a big wrestling fan. And once I found that out, we were able to get him a little bit involved and, you know, hang out with Melly Mel. And, you know, that was really cool because that's someone I grew up listening to as a kid. And, you know, here he is. He's watching us in the ring and he's putting us over, you know, and it was a cool deal. You know, I just wish they had a little more opportunity to show off on a bigger stage, you know, and there's still a deal, you know, they're still trying to work a deal to get on TV. So anything could happen. But I think right now Steve O'Neill is more focused on Extreme Rising. So, you know, if UWF comes back, I'm all for being a part of it again.
Right. Yeah, we definitely need those opportunities and wrestling also because there have been also talks of other companies possibly getting on major networks like AAA is Mexico expanding to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Expansion. Conan is working with AAA. That will be on the El Rey Network in
mm-hmm.
the second half of this year.
Yeah.
And also the big talk of Jeff Jarrett and Toby Keith starting their own wrestling promotion, possibly on a major network also.
Well, right now there needs to be something because with the WWE
right.
being the only real show in town where you can make some money, you know, guys
right.
are not wanting to invest anything into wrestling anymore. And there's a lot of guys – there's guys like Chris Dickinson who – I remember Chris Dickinson being a kid, and now Chris Dickinson is one of the better guys out there. And he's jacked up and he takes his craft serious, you know what I mean? And guys like Matt Tremont, he's he busts his ass in the ring every time. And, you know, guys like him, Masada, you know, the Briscoe brothers who – I mean, that's the best tag team in the world, two of the best wrestlers in the world, and why aren't they making mad money, you know what I'm saying? And even someone, and I'm not trying to stir the pot or anything like that, but I'm just saying someone like a Samoa Joe that we know is one of the best, you know, when he wants to be, he's one of the best in the world, period. You know, and right now you see him, what's he doing on TNA? I don't even know. I don't watch TNA, so I can't tell you, but what's he doing on there? Because I bet you ain't nothing big, you know what I mean? But
right.
If you put him in a situation like a Ring of Honor where he could be the top dog, or, you know, if this, you know, Jeff Jarrett company, you know, or the AAA America deal works out, you know, you put Samoa Joe on there, I guarantee you he has another year like 2005 when he was on top of the world. You know what I'm saying? Because
right.
there's no motivation for people to go out there and bust. You know, they're already on TNA. TNA's on TV. It don't matter what's going on, you know, if people are watching or not, they're just not going to go all out because they're going to get paid anyway. They're on TV, you know. It's not like before
right.
where you had to, you know, earn your spot. Now it's just like, you know, whatever, we're on TV, so here you go. WWE is, we want tall guys who all look like the same guy. We don't want to do anything with the indie guys because they're indie guys, you know. And they proved that with Loki, you know. Loki was one of the best in the world, and he won NXT, even though they pushed Alex Riley and and Kurt Hennig's kid down everybody's throat, he still won that, right? And what happened?
Right.
Less than 3 months later, he's fired. Does that make sense? No, because they want to do their own thing. They want to build up their own guys rather than take established guys and, you know, have them, you know, do their thing in front of a national network, but because they didn't develop them, they don't want to even bother. You know, and that's been their mentality for a long time, and that's cool. You know, they can do whatever they want. That's their company. But we need more outlets, you know, where talent can develop itself in the ring, you know, and, you know, the entertainment, there's always going to be the cream rises to the top, and the guys who can entertain are always going to be the ones that stand out, but they need an opportunity to be seen, a platform to be seen, and put out there that they can do this, that they can wrestle and they can talk. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, hopefully, you know, I'm rooting for one of them, both of them. I don't care which one. I'm rooting for anybody. Actually, I'm rooting for Extreme Rising right now because that's what's up. You know what I mean?
Right. And we're about to run out of time. Do you have any plugs for upcoming shows or anything else?
Yeah, real quick, I got February 8th in Pittsburgh, Extreme Rising, Hit Squad versus Blackout, match that I'm pretty sure we're going to go all out and try to steal the show. Then in March, Jersey Championship Wrestling is holding a tag tournament. Moff and myself are in it. Should be real good. If anything, you could always check me out on Facebook, SteveMacDHS. Or on Twitter, or on Instagram. They're all the same deal, Steve Mac DHS. And I'll always keep everybody posted, you know, and just support the indies because, you know, right now it looks like wrestling is on its deathbed, and I'm not trying to let it die. I'm trying to revive it. And there's a few guys with me who have the same mentality. We're trying to leave a good legacy. So.
Yeah. You definitely want to see more opportunities for guys.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, man. And, you know, as long as guys like yourself who are helping out indie wrestling, we'll be all right, you know. But we got to make sure we get the guys who have the talent and the skill get seen, you know what I mean?
Right.
So.
And, yeah, it's so much of an honor for you to come up on Wrestling X Factor Radio. You can come back anytime to the show.
Thank you, sir. It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure.
And you have a good night, Steve.
You too, Wayne. I'll catch you around.
All right. Well.
Peace.
That was Steve, Monster Mac. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to look at the archives on Blog Talk Radio, Wrestling X Factor, or our group page on Facebook, Wrestling X Factor Radio. Yeah, this is Wayne Benitez signing off. Chair on the hill when Forest Projects used
myself alone, just praying to God, hoping that today won't be the last. I mean, just the other day, this kid I knew got blast.
Say word.
Word, it wasn't over no cash, it was over some broad who liked the ocean off the ass. He was a cool kid, although he lost the bid. If he was a real nigga, then he wouldn't have got dead. Life strife, and then you die. Nobody dies of old age, but in the hands of another guy. That's why I keep an alibi. Giuliani wants to see your brother fry.
Eat your heart out, son. You never was afraid.